Hi, good evening. Welcome to the 12 Man Podcast, live on Facebook Live, on Amazon, Deezer, Spotify, Apple, all the good places you listen to your podcasts. You've got me, Steve Jackson. I'm your host for the evening. Didn't say main there. Get in. I'm learning. I'm your host for the evening. As usual, got Mr. John Donovan with me. Evening, John Dom.
Evening. How are you doing? Okay.
My main co-host. And special guest joining us. People know him for his voice, not for his face as such, but he is the voice of the Riverside. He has been for many years and hopefully for many years to come. Mr. John Foster is with us this evening. Evening, John, you all right?
Yes, hello, how are you?
We are doing good.
I just seem to be permanently with a microphone.
Yes, he's if people don't recognise who he is, obviously we'll go through it in the next hour. He's the one that walks around with a clipboard and a nice microphone, and you try and hear his voice through them Tannoy systems.
He's the one who sounds professional tonight anyway.
Yes, as you can see, the people watching, he looks very professional as well. So, yes, we're live. Get your questions in. In the background, we've all got our eyes on the TV screens because we know what's coming. So get your predictions in for, you know, who you think will get, who you think, you know, who you want to get, and we'll probably end up with, you know, someone like Burnley at home because that's our luck. But
if you're not sure, we're ball number 24. I'm sure everybody will know that.
Yep.
But
Mark Hughes and Dion Dublin doing the draw.
There you go. So,
I'm disappointed. I wanted Rod Stewart. I wanted opposite him. Yeah, I wanted opposite him. Greg Wallace. Now that would have been a spicy draw, wouldn't it?
Greg Wallace. Well, to be fair, they are bringing TV personalities in. I mean, they've got Holmes under the Hammers, Dion Dublin now. So, you know,
yeah,
but it's daytime TV.
And there's the stairs to the bedrooms, yeah? We all know that one.
Quality. What a start. Who thought we'd be talking about that straight away? Right, so we're going to talk about two home games, contrasting in emotions, a disappointing defeat, a good win, a very good win on Saturday. We'll talk to Sean about his career, you know, what made him get into the career he's chosen, you know, what's it like being the voice of the Riverside, you know, and all the questions we've got for him. And then we'll preview the game on Friday night. Trip to Burnley, funny enough. So, yeah, we'll get started. John Dom, we won't delve into this too much. Blackburn at home had one of those nights where we give it a good goal, but it was just too obvious we were missing some key ingredients to our little recipe, weren't we? We weren't quite firing all cylinders, weren't we?
Well, we weren't, I know, but when the team was announced, I was quite hopeful, you know, that we would be strong enough to take all 3 points. But as it proved, it wasn't to be. I mean, Blackburn, a real bogey side again for us, and they've done us. Disappointing, yeah. I mean, if anything sort of typified Borough, then that was it, wasn't it? You know, scoring four, scoring five, scoring six, and then getting beat.
Sorry, go on, mate.
No, I was just going to say it was such a frustrating night, and it was because it was
one of them teams that, you know, Blackburn fans were open and honest and said, you know, they weren't feeling massively confident, they didn't know what they were going to expect, you know, seeing Borough tear teams to bits. But first question for you, John. Obviously, you do all the announcing. You have to announce, you know, who scores the home teams away. As a Borough fan, you know, we know you're a massive Borough fan. How deflating is it? This is my personal question. How deflating is it when you have to announce that scorer for the away side? For me, I'd be like, microphone down. You've got to be quite professional about it. You know, what's the emotions inside you? You must be thinking, I don't want to say this.
Well, no, I mean, absolutely. When for instance, we put a video out of the third goal being scored on Saturday and Tommy Conway, we did a little video and put it onto socials and things like that. You know, so Borough's third goal of the afternoon scored by number 22, Tommy Conway. And then when, And then when, you know, the opposition score, could I be less interested? Goal for Blackburn Rovers scored by number. That's it. You know, you don't want to dwell on it. Yes, you've got to get the announcement out. So hopefully people hear who the scorer was if they didn't actually see it on the screen or whatever. But at the same time, I couldn't be less interested in finding out who actually scored their goal.
Just like all of us.
Well, that's what I thought. Because we all know you're a massive Borough fan, just as we are. And I thought, that's got to be one of the hardest jobs in the world. Seeing your team dominate as much as we did until, I suppose, 10 minutes before the goal itself, where Blackburn started to come into it a bit more.
Mm.
And then, you know, we were in the game. I felt we deserved more than just a point, to be quite honest. You know, I know we got beat 1-0, but then to get hit by that sucker punch, and it was offside as well.
Yeah,
that's the one thing you should have said, John. That's the one thing you should have said. It was offside. Lines on what you're doing.
What's going on?
Yeah.
No, it is, because at the end of the day, when I get to the ground and, you know, I'm walking around the ground and I see, you know, fans and they come up to me and, you know, it's not like you get mobbed or anything like that, far from it, but the odd one or two and say, what's the score going to be today, do you reckon? And I always give my same answer every week. I don't care. 1-0 will do. 1-0 will do. 3 points. Anything else, that's brilliant. But 1-0 will do. So that's always my stock answer. You know, how do you think we'll do this? How do you think we'll do on Friday against Burnley? I don't care, as long as it's 1-0. At least 1-0. That's all I'm interested in.
There we go, John. That's our charity bet started for Friday. 1-0. Things like that, it must be difficult. I mean, but then you look at the contrast of things. I mean, I know I'm delving back a little bit. When we hit Luton for 5, you must be stood there going, oh, just keep them coming, keep them. You know, this is amazing. You know, announcing Borough's 5th goal of the afternoon, you must have such a thrill and a buzz inside to say, you know, I'm the one that gets to see all this. You know, we're all the ones jumping around like idiots in the stands. But I bet where you are announcing it, you must be jumping around yourself as well.
Yeah, I mean, we have been known to, you know, stand and get to our feet and things like that. Yeah, I mean, it is brilliant to be able to do that. I mean, the job is a privilege. It's an absolute privilege. Never did I think I would be doing this at all. For a bit of history and a bit of back story, I was an announcer elsewhere in the Northeast, and I did that for a lot of years. And then we moved. Where I'm talking to you now is way down in West Yorkshire, nearly on the Manchester border. That's where we moved to. So I gave up. I you know, couldn't do that football club a little bit further up the A19 anymore. And I gave it up. And I never thought I would be match announcing again. And then, lo and behold, I get a phone call from Spennymoor Town first, about 5 years ago, saying, can you do our announcements? Our announcer's ill. Can you come in and do it? And I said, yeah, of course I can. So I went and did it. And I thought, oh, actually, I quite like doing this. Oh, brilliant. And then I did my couple of games and then that was it. And then, you know, I get to do Middlesbrough and I've been doing it now. It'll be 5 years coming up, 5 years in January. Never did I think I would be doing it. What a privilege for somebody who was born and brought up in Beechwood in Middlesbrough and used to go and be in the chicken run and used to stand in the hall gate. And never did I once think I would be doing it, you know, as the announcer. I don't know how long it'll last for, who knows, but it's 5 years at the minute and it's been an absolute joy and privilege to be able to do it. And I never take it for granted. I try and keep everybody happy, which is almost nigh on impossible sometimes. But, you know, we just try and get through the games and be unnoticed, I think, is probably the best thing, because then if you are noticed, you open yourself up to either praise or grumble. So I'd rather just keep it down the middle and just do what I have to do, play what I have to play, announce what I have to announce, and that's it. And anything else apart from that is always thought out with people at the club. And, you know, we've asked people like yourselves at the 12th man, what do you think about this? What do you think about the other? So, you know, I don't want anybody to think I just go and think, right, I'm going to do this tonight, because we don't do it like that.
I must admit, it must take some restraint, because I don't think I could do that without either getting myself into trouble or just going a bit over the top with my celebrations. But fair play. I mean, yeah, I'm glad you said I'm glad you said you were from Beechwood, because I was going to put like a little bio on Twitter saying you were from Easterside. That's a cardinal sin. I would have got that wrong, wouldn't I?
No, Beechwood, Howarth Road. Howarth Road is where I was brought up. So, yeah, you know, when the goal goes in, you know, it's always something along the line. Borough's first goal of the afternoon. And the fifth for Middlesbrough tonight is scored by number, 18, Riley McGree. And we try and do it a bit like that. So hopefully, the, you know, if the fans are there, they can latch onto that and give it another whoa.
Yeah. Well, listen, the way we scored goals this season, maybe you need to renegotiate your contract and do a like payment.
What contract?
Yes,
I do it for the love. No, it has been great this season. Of course, the first couple of years when I was doing it, coronavirus basically wiped us out. I think I did about 5 or 6 games, and then, you know, we were all in lockdown, and that was it for about a year and a half, wasn't it? Season and a half or something like that. So then when we've come back to it, it's been a roller coaster, you know, with people like Neil Warnock and then obviously Chris Wilder taking over, and those amazing cup matches that we had under Wilder. And then obviously Carrick comes in, and again, you know, at the beginning of the year against Chelsea and those sort of games. Fantastic, fantastic atmospheres.
It's amazing. It's a dream job for me. Absolute dream job, just to be able to do something you love with your hometown club and the team that you love yourself. And I love it. It's absolutely fine. You know, amazing. But I'll delve into Saturday now. Obviously, we're Hull at home. I'll start. Obviously, John Dyer, I usually come to you, but I'm going to start with Mr. Foster first.
Okay.
Between obviously yourself arriving at work and kickoff, talk to us through your little routine, like the, you know, what you go through before, I suppose, we start coming in and we start hearing the, you know, the voices coming through the tannoy saying, welcome to the Riverside Stadium, as we're all walking up to the Riverside. What do you do?
So,
I thought we were 23. So that was 23.
I know, Arsenal have just come out. Arsenal against Man U. Ooh.
That's a big one.
So, in the couple of days on the run up to the actual match, I'm watching it now as well. On the actual run up to the game, you know, we get together a script. You might not think it, but there is a script that we come up with, and it's usually things that, you know, is happening within the club. You know, Anthony Vickers might be signing his new legacy numbers book. You know, the ticket information, whatever. So we come up with that. Then I go through all of the away players with how do you pronounce. On Google and trying to nail the pronunciations, do them out phonetically. That's one of the toughest parts of the job, because no matter how many times, you know, you listen to a commentator, they'll always pronounce it differently. Three commentators will pronounce the name three different ways sometimes. So you've just got to try and knuckle down and see which one's right. So then we get all the music together. Obviously, this year we've been doing Riverside Records, so it's been the choices of the fans and also a particular player that week. So, you know, we're sourcing those tracks. Then I get to the ground after a long drive. I get there normally about an hour and a half before turnstiles open. We load all the computer up, all the playout system that we have for the songs and everything. We do our checks to make sure that we can be heard here, there and everywhere. The turnstiles open normally about an hour and a half before kickoff. So about 1:30 for a 3 o'clock kickoff. And then we slowly start to play some music. There's adverts going off on the big screen. We've done lots of checks to make sure that the audio from the big screen can get to us. We have radios and we do announcements to outside. We do them inside. We do them in the concourses as well. And then just slowly as the game and the ground starts to fill up, we turn the music up a little bit louder. There's certain things that we try and do all the time. So, for instance, this season, whenever the team run out for the warm-up, we're playing a particular piece of music so that everybody knows that if you're on the concourses, rather, or if you're in the ground, as soon as you hear that music, you know the team are coming out to do their warm-up. And then we run through the team news half an hour beforehand. And then literally it's just whatever, you know, fan cam, different announcements, say hello to the away fans, some of the players who've played for both, maybe some Borough birthdays, other bits and pieces we need to read from the script. Match control tell us that a car needs moving or somebody's got lost and needs to be reunited with somebody, we do those announcements as well. And then from about 7 minutes to kickoff, that's when it's called the hype video comes on, and it's all the footage of all the different games and music and stuff like that. And then about 4 minutes to is when the referee is walking the two teams out. So roughly when you hear the hype, that's about 6 minutes to. That means the ref's called the two teams to the tunnel, and then he's walking at four with pig bag, 4 minutes to with pig bag. And then it's a case of just watching them do the toss-up while reading the two starting 11s. And then hopefully by the time I finish the Borough starting 11, we are just about ready for kickoff. In a nutshell. In a nutshell, that is.
Well, that pretty much describes everything, doesn't it? I mean, there's no stone unturned.
Is that it? Am I done now?
No.
Hang on.
Middlesbrough. Last made it past round three when they got to the quarterfinal.
Home draw.
Four.
And they'll be welcoming
Blackburn.
Oh, there you go.
We've just been talking about them as well, bloody hell. Yeah. Oh, well.
What an absolute
Middlesbrough against Blackburn Rovers in the Cup.
It's such a letdown there, isn't it?
I said the wrong one. I meant Blackburn, not Burnley.
So in a nutshell, yeah, that's roughly what happens. And then when the game's on, you know, we're watching the game. We sit in the back of the south stand next to match control. That's where our point is. And the guy sitting next to is the person who operates the big screen. And, he's flipping between highlights and between the action, rather, and also adverts, because there's certain rules he's got to adhere to as well. And then we go to half time. I normally go down to the side of the pitch about 42 minutes, announce the extra time by the side of the tunnel, and then we go on, do whatever we have to do at half time, whether it's the penalties, whether it's the competition, whether it's whatever, and then music till the start of the second half, and then I'm back in the box again.
There you go. I mean,
very good. Busy match for you.
It can be
really busy sometimes. Because obviously we have the light shows as well we can do on an evening game, but we don't. I think the light shows are really good and they're brilliant, but I think if you do it every single night time, it might just water it down a little bit. I mean, we did something special for the Chelsea game at the beginning of the year, and we put pictures up of the of former players, and we got a different bit of music, and we thought about, you know, how we're going to program the lights and everything, and that seemed to work really well. But I think if you were to do it every single match, I don't know if it might lose something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I imagine it probably would, because you want to keep it, like, I suppose, exclusive to certain occasions kind of thing, don't you? And you don't want to, like, over milk it, because people would get bored, like you said. So how, obviously, you know, the team gets read out, we all see the team at 2 o'clock come out. When do you receive the team sheet? What time do you receive that?
I received that. So if it's a 3 o'clock kickoff, we'll normally get it about 10 to 2, 5 to 2 or something like that. And then I get my little sheet of paper with all my phonetics names written down, and I go through it and just make sure that, the 15 phonetic names that I've written down and tried to learn, only two of them are going to be playing. So, you know, never mind. And then we just take it from there. But we normally do the team news at about 30 minutes to kick off.
Yeah, I said, doesn't say, I think it's about half an hour beforehand, isn't it? Yeah. But John Don, I'll come to you. What did you make of the team on Saturday? I say, there was a couple of changes. Obviously, Doak back in, Azaz back in.
Yeah. Like Bergzorg as well, you know. I thought there was enough there to win the game, because I know that Dykesdale was in, wasn't he? Clark was out. We had Dale Fry return. So that was a little bit, I was unsure, you know, because what is it, 7 or 8 months since Dale Fry's played? It was going to be a difficult game for him with is it João Pedro? He's one of the lads up front for Hull. Who's quite lively.
John Carew.
I was fairly pleased with the team. I always look now to see if Ben Doak starts. I think we're a different team with him. He offers us so much. But I can understand that he is playing a lot of games for a youngster, and there might be times when he needs to be sort of like just given a little bit of rest and recuperation and just take it easy. So when I saw him starting for against Hull, I was pleased because, like I say, he's a game changer for us.
Oh, he's a massive game changer. Unbelievable football. Him and Azaz coming back in gave me the confidence straight away. When I saw the team, I thought, yeah, I think we've got more than enough now. You know, I think we massively missed them Wednesday night. John, when you obviously see the team a little bit before we do, do you look at it as a fan as well and see that and go, well, why isn't he playing? Why is he not playing? Why is he coming? Do you look at it a bit like we do?
Yeah, I think anybody does, don't they? If there's like one or two changes and it's, not even on the bench, or is on the bench, or, oh, they've got to start again, you know. Finn Azaz was out, wasn't he, against Blackburn? And then, you know, there is that sort of like tiny bit of excitement when you say, oh, he's back in the side. Brilliant. Great. You know, because he's had a great season so far. So, yeah, we do look at it a bit like a fan.
Yeah, it's fascinating, you know, as we're going on, find out loads more about, you know, little bits that you do. Because, you know, you don't even think about all that, so you just hear the voice and you think, everything's just quite natural. Because it does sound quite natural as well, but obviously, the game starts, you know, we get stuck into him. At no point, John Don, did I think Hull were going to score the first goal. Am I being a bit naive there, or was the confidence just there? Thought we were just a better team.
Yeah, we started well, but I was pleased to see that they had a slightly different approach to Blackburn. They were prepared to have a go at us. And to be fair, at 0-0, there was a moment when Borges and Borges and Yao Pedro was were pulling each other and. And it could easily have been a red card, that, you know.
We go away with that.
The nothing happened. Referee sort of allowed play to continue. So like you say, they offered us a threat, but we started brightly and then took the lead, obviously with a stunning goal. Finn Azaz, he just. I don't know whether he's just hit a purple patch or whether or not he's gaining in confidence, or other players are knowing what he's capable of, and it's all clicking for him. But he's had a fantastic sort of last couple of months, hasn't he? And he's another one who you look to be starting as many games as he can, because he offers so much to our attacking options.
Well, I think we're starting to see the signing that we got from Plymouth. I know we signed him from Villa, I get that. But it's the player that Plymouth saw every week and they were gutted to see go. But, you know, as soon as he hit it, I said straight away, that's in. It's just one of those goals as well. John, when you see goals like that going in, obviously, you know, you've got to then, first thing you've got to do is pick your microphone up, get ready for that moment. Do you get feelings like I did with goals like that? You think, I better get ready now because that's going in. There's just no other way that's going. A bit like what Azaz scored against Luton. As soon as he left his foot that day, we knew that was in. You get the same sort of thing as we do.
Yeah, you do, don't you? It's the same when Joshy Boy rifled one in, wallop, as Maddo said, against, was it Spurs in the Cup a couple of seasons ago?
Yeah,
he knew as soon as that left his foot, that was going in. That wasn't going to stop. And you do get yourself ready. And those are brilliant, brilliant moments. But then, of course, you've got to make sure that it's onside. The goal hasn't been disallowed for anything. So you see the goal and the net ripple, and then immediately you look for the linesman, the assistant referee, sorry, as they're called, to make sure that it's not been flagged. And then we like to wait a little bit and then announce the goal. So we don't announce it straight away while everybody's, you know, going mental or anything like that. We sort of like give it a couple of seconds and then we'll announce it in the hope that it'll pick back up again and then go for the kickoff. But you do. Normally, there's a couple of us in the box. So there's a guy who helps us out called Isaac, Isaac Nolan, who's a bit of a star. But every time he goes to the loo, we end up scoring. So I don't know if we need him to go to the loo a few more times, because literally the past couple of games, when he's disappeared off for a Jimmy Riddle, we've ended up scoring. So I don't know. You see Isaac go to the loo, get ready.
Well, I just wonder, I mean, you've got to obviously be very composed and make the announcement over the stadium tonight. I just wonder how do you think Alistair Brownlee would have approached that? Because he used to sort of
he'd still be shouting goal now, wouldn't he? He'd still be shouting goal. It'd still be going on now. Yeah. I mean,
some of his goal celebrations are legendary and absolutely fantastic to listen to even today. You know, it brings hairs on the back of your neck, doesn't it? Standing up. But yeah, you can't do that, I suppose. But I would be totally tempted just to grab all the mic and get in, you know. It would be, that would be me, and that would be my one match that I'd do it, because I'd be sacked after that.
I suppose, you know, we could try doing something like that. The only thing that it has been instilled into me about doing this is you've just got to be so careful, because all it takes is, for instance, an away fan to turn around and make a complaint about you or whatever it is. You can be seen as inciting the crowd. So me saying, you know, get in, come on, Borough, that's the fourth. Whoa, whatever. You know, that could be seen as inciting the crowd. So you've got to be really careful. There was one game I noticed the announcer said at halftime, and it's halftime here at wherever it was, and the score is, we are 4-0 up against them. Let's just repeat that. It's us 4-0. Third time, it's us 4-0. And actually, that's inciting the crowd. And you've got to be really, really careful about how you say things and what you say, because I don't want to get into bother at all. So, you know, you do have to temper it just a tiny bit. But hopefully, you know, third goal of the afternoon, number 22, Tommy Conway. Hey! You know, hopefully that suffices.
Yeah, I couldn't do that job. I'd be too tempted if we were 4-0 up at half-time going, right, what's the score? What's the score? Say it again. And then they'll be like, yeah, just turn the microphone off him. Just turn the microphone off him. You can't do it. But I did wonder how things like that work. Because, you know, is there a line that you've got to hit to not make sure you're going over that line? Obviously, like you said there, you know, there's some things, you know, some away fans can be a bit soft. You know, if we're away from home, we're getting pumped 3-0. I'm not going to stand there and go, well, I'm going to kick off about that announcer because he's teasing that we're getting beat 3-0. I'd be more fuming that we're getting beat 3-0, full stop. But, you know, is it tough to keep yourself in check in that, I suppose? I want to say that zone, but you get what I mean. Like, you don't want, do you feel that yourself getting towards that line, you have to pull yourself back, or are you just always in control at all times?
I think because I've been doing it for so long, you know, 5 years at the Borough and before that 18 years somewhere else. You know, it's just I've got used to doing it like that. And, you know, I haven't got it myself into bother. Like I say, the other thing is if you go too far over the top, you know, a couple of the supporters might turn around and think, well, look at him. He's only doing it. It's all about him, isn't it? Here we go. He wants to be the star of the show and all of that sort of stuff. And that's not what I want to do at all. All I want to do is just do what I have to do, make it enjoyable, if you want, for the fans, and then go home again. You know, I don't want anybody ever to think that, oh, he's just done that because he's doing it. He's got the microphone. Oh, it's all about him. It's not. It's about the team at the end of the day. It's about the team and it's about the fans. And if I can be like a little go between the two, the bridge or whatever, however you want to term it, that's okay for me. Maybe I might be able to step it up a gear. I don't know. But again, you've just got to be careful. Some fans might love it. Some fans might hate it. Away fans might really, really get annoyed at it and start kicking off at stewards and things like that. And that's the last thing that you want.
That's fair. One thing we've been asking our guest, John, obviously, as the season's been going on, John Don's already mentioned him, Ben Doak. What have you made of Ben Doak? You know, we're so excited by, you know, the prospect of having him for potentially for the rest of the season. You know, fingers crossed, you know, hopefully Liverpool don't recall him. You know, but we're so privileged to have him as well. He's such a talent. What have you made of what you've seen of him so far?
He's just incredible, isn't he? And, you know, once And I think he was incredible from the word go. He got the bit between his teeth, and he's just gone for it in every single game that he's played. And obviously, it's done him the world of good going out on loan and coming to the Borough. You know, it's done him the world of good, both for him as a player, for his mentality as a player, no doubt, and also for his burst onto the international scene as well. So it's a win-win for everybody, Liverpool included. So it's been great to see somebody come in with that amount of confidence at such a young age. And sometimes, you know, taking the game by the scruff of the neck and really going for it.
Exactly. No, you're absolutely right. And John, on that follow, that leads us nicely onto our second goal. Because, you know, I know Dyke still did the hard work winning the ball back, but, you know, Dort got himself to the back line again. A different ball. And we're used to him whipping it in between the defenders and the goalkeeper, a bit more direct, but a bit more floaty this one. They say hit Conway right on the sweet spot, defender tried, couldn't keep it out. And all of a sudden, we've gone from 1-0 to 2-0 in no time. And you're thinking, we could be on for 4 and 5 again here.
Yeah, it was a well-worked goal. Like you said, it was Dykesdale who sort of won the 50-50, give it back to Doak. But I listened to an interview with Tommy Conway, and he was on about his sort of relationship on and off the pitch with Ben Doak. And he was saying that Ben Doak knows that he'll always find Tommy Conway towards the back post. So he said, on Saturday, he said, we made eye contact and I told him where I was going and he floated the ball over. It was like a chip ball over. And then Conway was where he told him to put it on the end of it and he just looped the header in. And that gives us that two-goal cushion, which is always for Borough. Well, most teams, but definitely for Borough, a two-goal cushion is it makes it just a bit more comfortable, and it allows the fans a bit more breathing space, and it's less tense for the fans. Mm-hmm. So yeah, 2-0 at half time, thoroughly deserved.
Exactly, you're absolutely right. It was thoroughly deserved. I didn't see any way they could get back into it. Before I talk about the second half, quick question, John: half time penalties. Why did they go to the south stand?
Just to mix it up a little bit, just to mix it up, because traditionally they're in the north stand, and if you look, the mams and the dads and everybody connected with the two teams are normally sat Generation Red Fan Zone or somewhere in the north stand. So that's why predominantly they're always down the north end. But we thought we'd just mix it up this week and go down the south stand, because again, climbing those stairs to the back of the south stand, there will be somebody who says, why do you always do it up the north end? Can we not have it down the south end? Mm. So we just mixed it up a little bit. Just mixing it up.
It's good. It's good. I mean, I'm glad to see the half-time penalty kicks are back. It's always good to have your pound bet with the fella next to you. You know, like, I'll go for the yellows, you go for the reds, and it's a daft quid. And it's always something to do at half-time if you're not going down for a drink, that is.
Yeah, exactly. I missed the second goal on Saturday. I was in the West Concourse and I just heard this big roar go up and I was out and again and then at the seat and decks as well. And, you know, and the radio, who's scored? Who's scored? I didn't see it at all. And then stood with a load of fans in the West Stand lower doing the announcement there. And they all, whoa, behind me as well, which is nice.
Oh, I love that. But yeah, we got.
I was stadium announcer, not knowing who scored the goal. Yeah.
I know. Well, I was making my way for half time. I was going through the corridors and everything, so I missed it. Just did this massive.
It's almost a cameo moment. I don't know, Jeff, who scored.
Well, yeah. The worst one is when you're having a Jimmy Riddle or something like that, and you hear the noise go up in the ground. It's like, oh my God, who scored? Who scored? Hurry up! Come on, quick! Pass me the mic.
No, it's like one of those moments in radio where you put a song on and you're in the toilet a bit too long and it starts finishing and you're like, oh, God.
Yeah.
God.
Oh, it's happened to me. Or the record. The record. This is how far back we're going. The record got stuck in this. Like that. And oh, God. That's happened to me before.
It's I can't imagine, it's one of the worst moments you could possibly have in that sort of industry as well.
So if we hear the announcements a bit echoey, we know where you are, John.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, with the sound of the loo, yeah. Absolutely. Yes.
Yes, if you hear a flush. But the second half came, I thought we were a bit down. I thought it wasn't our quickest way out of the blocks. But that moment came, John, where the away team did score and you had to do your go over Hull.
Yeah.
You know, make them burst or... did at moments like that, obviously we're stood in the stands. I imagine you're going to say yes to this, but I've got to ask the question. We all stood there going, "Oh, please don't let this happen again." You know, we've amount of times as Borough fans, we've seen us lose two goal leads over the years, and you just know one soon comes two. Are you stood there on the microphone going, "I hope I don't have to hold this in about 10 minutes and say a second goal's gone in"?
Yeah, it's almost like you can feel the nerves going around the ground. Can't you? And it's just like everybody then goes on the edge of the seat for the wrong reason, you know, rather than on the edge of the seat for another goal for us. But it's like, oh, it's squeaky bum time, I think it's probably what it's known as best. But you do. And I think with Blackburn Rovers the other night, I think I got the impression that a lot of people were on edge. A lot of the fans were on edge. I don't know if it had something to do with it being night match, the weather had been a bit, you know, foul and all of that sort of stuff. And I don't know if people, you know, in that frame of mind were just a bit, oof, here we
it
go.
It was a flat night. Yeah, it was a flat night, wasn't it? You know,
but then on Saturday, everybody seemed to be up for it. And then you see that, you know, Finnazaz is back in the ground. And there was a lot more confidence going around the ground as well. So, you know, the 12th man, I think, really does play a big part in it. And again, you know, with the big nights at the Riverside, like Chelsea earlier on this year in the Cup, you know, when the place is rocking, that's literally, you know, worth another goal, isn't it? So
yeah, I mean, for a 12:30 start, it was a good team performance. It was a good up tempo sort of type of game, and the atmosphere was good also, which took me by surprise really, because normally the early starts are a bit subdued to use a word. But yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it. Good atmosphere, good win. And at 2-1, I think we got away with another incident. I don't know whether you saw it on the highlights, Steve. But they had a shot and it struck Finnazaz on the hand or on the arm. And it could easily have been given as a penalty. And I've seen that so many times. It would have been a little bit harsh, but I've seen them given, and I just thought we got away with it again.
Mm. Yeah, there was a couple of incidents which I thought the referee missed. I thought there was one we could have had in the first half. I think one of their defenders slid, but his arm was completely away from his body. It was out, you know, out away and out wide, and it clearly hit his arm. Everybody saw it, and the ref went, "Nah, no chance." But I thought the referee missed a couple of things on Saturday. He's saying Borges and João Pedro wrestling, which everybody saw, and then said, "Oh no, I'll just play on," kind of thing. But, you know, the striker didn't help himself. If he actually just ran towards the ball, he'd have got it. You know, there'd be no problem, no arguments. Mm. But yeah, I'm going to pull my hands up. I did miss that one. I didn't quite see the Assaz handball. So I'll take your words that we should have conceded a penalty there and go from there. But then the third goal goes in, John Don. Doak again, Conway again. And usually you think, oh, we're going to talk about Doak again. But it was more the touch from Conway to get away from his defender and the subtle little finish, which I know they keep trying to say, but still went in. I thought it was a beautiful finish. I thought it was a great goal.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the understanding between them two, it's a bit like Dally mentioned last week when we spoke about Finnazaz and Latialaf. Azaz seems to know where to put the ball for Latialaf to be on the end of. So I think that there's a good understanding growing there, and obviously that they're international teammates also. But at 2-1, it's a one goal difference. You're never home and dry, but it was great to get that that third goal and give us a 2-goal cushion. And yeah, again, Ben Doak, another assist. Great. I mean, I love how he never gives up. You know, We watched him earlier on the season against Watford, and he got no joy whatsoever out of the big lad who was marking him. I forget the guy's name, the Watford fullback. And Doak was getting no change whatsoever from him, but he never dropped his head. He never gave up. He kept on going. He kept on going. And that's what I like about him. He's got so much confidence. He's got a fantastic turn of pace, you know. He's a great player. I mean, if I had one Christmas wish, it would be for us to get him on a permanent. But Santa won't bring me that wish, I'm afraid.
I think there's many teams.
You never know.
Well, yeah, I'll give you that. I think there's many teams in this league and the league above that will probably wish they had a winger like Ben Doak. I think there's a song in there somewhere. Asking for him on a Christmas Eve could be a bit far-fetched even for Santa Claus, unfortunately. especially with the comments that Salah's coming out with as well, you know, in the last couple of days, looking like it could be his last season at Anfield with Liverpool. He's the natural successor, it's obvious. He's just, the kid's a natural talent. He's one of the best naturally talented players I've ever seen at the Riverside in the Borough shirt, and that's saying something. The amount of players we've all seen. But when you announced the third goal, John, did you feel the relief as well as, obviously, you know, we were all absolutely buzzing, we scored, but did you feel the relief as well? Like, thank God, we put that to bed, we're back comfortable again, it looks like game over.
Yeah, you can feel it go round the ground, can't you? You know, yeah. So, but then it builds up again because everybody then wants a fourth. Yeah. You know, so they're aiming for the fourth. But there was a collective sigh of, thank goodness for that, job done now. Job done. Let's just see this game out. Job done. But, you know, we always want a fourth, don't we? And then we want a fifth, and then we'd like a sixth, and so it goes on. But, yeah, the sense of relief was palpable considering what was happening on Wednesday against Blackburn Rovers.
Yeah. I mean, I think Hull were decent opponents. I mean, to see them in the bottom three and to see how they performed on Saturday, it was surprising. I would never have guessed that they would... They were a bottom three team. They come here to give us a go. They didn't sort of sit back at any time. So it made for a good game.
Well, you know, the fact that they just got rid of their manager, and I was on Radio Humberside on the Friday night doing a bit on their sports programme. And I said, you know, whole bit in turmoil. And, you know, the guy presenting, James Hogarth, Hoggy, said, you know, yeah, he said pretty much, you know, that's what the fans are saying. You know, the club is in turmoil at the minute. So it's a good, it's one of those things. It's either a great time to play a team without a manager, or it's the worst time to play a team without a manager, because it's either going to be a win or it's going to be a resounding get stuffed beat. But luckily for us, we came out on top.
We did. And I'm going to absolutely disagree with what you just said there, John Don. I thought Hull one of the worst teams I've ever seen.
I thought Blackburn. They came to frustrate. Every time I looked up, one of the Blackburn players just seemed to be on the floor. So goodness knows what was going on.
Yeah.
We're trying to find songs with Fall Down on them or Falling Down or something to play at half time.
Yeah.
But would that have been inciting the crowd? Who knows?
Well, I'd have played it anyway. I'm a wound up merchant. But I mean, I don't say that disrespectfully to Hull, but that's not the Hull City I remember us playing in years gone by. I really don't. They were absolutely horrendous at times on Saturday. The simplest of passes were going astray. You know, the running, they tried the press in the first 30 seconds. And then when they realised they couldn't get anywhere near us, just went, can't bother doing that anymore. And I thought,
the two lads up front, Palmer. Is it Palmer? Is he Palmer? Pedro, yeah. They'll give a lot of teams trouble. So, you know, we hope that when Hull come up against Watford, West Brom, Sunderland, Leeds, that they, you know, they take points off them. Because I know we disagreed in how you think that they played on Saturday, but I still think there can be a tough outfit.
I think they've got the ingredients in there to be a difficult team for a lot of teams in this league. You know, they've got the strong lads up front, players at the back, tricky wingers as well. I thought they were quite good on the wings. The lad who put the ball in for Burstall for the goal, I thought that was a hell of a ball in. I thought it was brilliant. But yeah, there was just aspects of that part of their game. I thought you can tell why their manager's just being sacked, because if he's taught them this, you know, there's a big problem. They weren't the same team I'm used to watching over the years. The team that are a bit of a pain in the backside against us. So, you know, they should have just done what Blackburn did. Come here and frustrated us, and they might have actually got a bit more success. But, you know, they went their way, and we just had our way with them, didn't we, really? So, but, yeah, it is what it is. But then, John Don, I know it was midway through the second half, but it took a while, but we're finally off the mark. My little venture into trying to expand our horizons on trying to get something in the charity kitty has worked. First players in.
Your first go at it, and 100% yeah. Success rate. So well done.
I know. So
John, this season we've had no luck whatsoever with our charity bets, where each of us choose the score line we think it'll be in the match, and an anytime goal scorer. Mm. We've been close on so many occasions, but we haven't got one right. So Jacko last week said, I'm going to introduce another bet. He said, I'm going to put a bet on a player who I think will be carded during the game. And he's got it right. So yeah, we're off the mark. We're off and running.
Hey, good stuff.
Yeah. I mean, people who listened last week, they will say, well, hang on, you said Luke Ayling. Yes, I did. You're absolutely right. I did. But Luke Ayling didn't start and he didn't come on. So I made the decision. I went, right, I've got to change that. And I put on Neto Borges. And it came in. He should have come in for the first 20 minutes, to be fair. But put it on. Neto Borges came in. The first few minutes of the second half, he went in a bit like a madman, as he usually does. So, you know, if you're in the same persuasion as I am, he's worth a couple of quid. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
And yes, we're off the mark. It's only £13, but it is 13 quid. It's going to go to a good charity end of the day. And
this is it. We'll be like a frustrated striker now. Get that first goal, and there'll be a glut of goals come our way.
Exactly.
Glut of winning bets.
Exactly.
That's all I'm waiting for now. I'll let you know in a little bit what I'm going to go for the Burnley game on Friday. But before I move on and get a little bit more from John about his career and things, John, I'll start with you. Your man of the match for Saturday.
Yeah, it was. I was thinking about this. There was a fair few candidates because, I thought Ben Doak, I thought Finn Azaz, Tommy Conway all played really well. But I'm going to go for Hayden Hackney. I just think he made a hell of a difference in the midfield for us. Kept
Captain
on
for the day as well.
Looking to go forward all the time. No sort of silliness like he did last time he was captain and saw red. Hayden Hackney was my man of the match.
Yeah, quite ironic he saw red in that game when we were no more red. Quite ironic, isn't it? But, you know, I think that's where things go. John, who was your man of the match from what you saw on Saturday?
Well, again, like John, there was a lot to choose from, wasn't there? So, you know, Ben Doak, Tommy Conway. I've always thought Tommy Conway was a good buy, you know, and he's proven his worth. He's like a dog with a bone, in the same way that Ben Doak is as well, and never gives up. But, you know, then going into the centre of the park, and even Sol Brin, you know, I think to step up, and yes, he's been out on loan a few seasons, hasn't he? Here, there and everywhere, mm-hmm. But he's got his chance. And, you know, I think he's been doing particularly well, you know, in the games he's been doing. But man of the match Saturday, I'll go Ben Doak. Why not?
There you go. You've gone Doak. John Don's gone Hackney. I'm going to go Tommy Conway. You see, he's really
there
settled
you
now. He's, you know, two goals again. Starting the programme before the game, Jason showed me this. The only player to score more than one goal against Hull at Riverside was Rudy Gestede. I thought, well, that needs to change because he's one of the worst footballers I've ever seen in my life. you think I wouldn't like him, don't you? You think I don't like him? But
we'll give that away.
Yeah, well, I've got many stories that I can't repeat on here. So, I thought when Tommy got his second goal, I thought, well, that's that stat gone. And you know, it puts him level on goals as well, I think, with Vatir Laff. Might have even just surpassed him by one, but
I think he's got eight and Vatir Laff's got seven.
He's showing, you know, the few million quid that we paid for him. You know, Bristol City calling him, you know, a waste of money. You know, wasn't worth keeping what he was asking for. But he's starting to come into his own and he's starting to show us why he's worth the money, why he was worth the time to invest to try and get him to the Riverside. And it's just another feather in the cap of Kieran Scott and his transfer policy, because the players he's bringing in have been brilliant. And, you know, I can't doubt the guy. Every time we link to someone, I think, well, he knows what he's doing. I can't doubt him anymore.
I'm loving the fact that we've got two strikers scoring, you know, and it's obviously difficult for the manager, but on the other hand, it's great to know that if you can alternate them, keep them fresh, keep them hungry. And it'll only benefit the team, and we've got that in different sort of parts of the pitch. You know, we've got we've got the midfield. You know, so McGree didn't play.
Is he frozen?
He's frozen.
I think he's froze.
Look at that face.
John Don, no. I'm sure he'll come back to us.
Oh, he's gone now. He's had enough.
He's gone now. He'll come back to us. He'll be back
in a minute. He'll be
exactly. But I'll come to you then, John. Obviously, you know, you said a little bit earlier about your career. You know, the team up the road. You know, we don't have to say them, but we all know who they are.
it's not Newcastle.
Yes, if you don't know, they wear stripes. I think John.
Anyway,
back.
He's back now. Shh.
Yeah. Go on, John. You were saying.
I don't know what happened there. I just lost my screen. I just came. We've got we've got competition in different parts of the pitch, which is great, because it allows a manager to sort of like use the squad wisely, so that we can offer players that when they're looking a bit tired, we can offer them a rest and. It just keeps us fresh. And I think our squad might be one of the key reasons that we can sort of maintain a push for top two this season. I really hope so. You know, we've got such a good squad. We've got January approaching. We don't know what the club will do within that window. But it's good to see that players are getting used sparingly. And it keeps them hungry, keeps them fresh. It can only be a positive for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely right. It's great to see. It's brilliant to see. And it reminded me of when, you know, this is what we kind of wanted when we had a Sombolonga and Bamford here. You know, they both couldn't exactly play on the same team, but you thought we could get a goal out of one of them if the other one, you know, needs to be taken off or whatever it may be. And we actually, you know, for the first time since, I'd probably say, you know, David Nugent and Jordan Rhodes, we've got two capable strikers that when you need a goal, you'll get one. Because I know Rhodes didn't score many for us, but the goals he did score, well, they were massively important, sure, weren't
yeah.
they?
Right
know,
time, at the right times, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We absolutely needed him. So, you know, that's the kind of thing we've got at the moment. It's so healthy to have that as well, because they're both on the toes. They're both thinking, you know what, we could... You know, I could lose my spot here. If I don't score today, I'm going to lose my spot, because he'll come off the bench and he'll grab one. And that's exactly
again,
what
like,
to be.
Yeah, like I was saying earlier when I listened to an interview with Tommy Conway, he was on about the competition between the two players, but he said, it's all good. The good mates, they help each other. There's no sort of like, they're not putting each other's nose out of joint. They're working for the good of the team, you know. Collectively, so that's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. And that's the best part about it, isn't it? You know, it's exciting following the Borough at the moment. It really is exciting. It's I'm enjoying this. I really am enjoying it. You know, nothing boring about us this season, which is amazing. But yeah, we'll have 5 minutes away from that. You know, we'll preview Burnley in a minute. John, I want to come quickly back to you because obviously you've talked a lot about your career. You know, you've given us a kind of insight about, you know, your day-to-day thing about, you know, putting your script together for match days and having to learn some, you know, players. And I imagine if we had players like Wojciech Szczęsny coming every week, you'd be in the right kerfuffle.
Who?
Exactly. You know, so you don't need to learn that, don't worry. But, you know, but you've worked with some unbelievable people as well, you know, throughout your career. You know, none more so personally, obviously for a local thing, than Ali Brownlee. You know, you got the chance to work with Ali Brownlee, didn't you? So,
I went to work on the sports programme at Radio Cleveland, as it was in 1987. And I was a Saturday lad and used to make the tea and used to listen to Radio 2 and Sport On 2 and jot down all the national scores and hand them over to the presenter, John Allard, or you'd answer the phones, you know, well before the days of the internet. So Ali used to ring up him and Gordon Cox. And Coxie is a legend. Yeah. And he helped me when I first came to the borough to do the announcements. He was there in the box helping me and just making sure that I was okay because it was all, you know, very last minute. And he was the steadying hand. And it's been great to get to know Coxie again. But it was him and Ali in the early days. And we used to put them on the radio. And then I used to press all the buttons and do what they call drive the program. And I did that for a number of years. So back in the old Radio Cleveland days, when you heard Alistair Brownlee and Gordon Cox, it was me that had put them on the radio. It was me that opened the fader and let them be heard. And they were great, absolutely fantastic duo together. And Coxie worked for BT, I think, at the time. So if ever there was a problem with getting the line through, he would ring somebody in another exchange. He would get in touch with somebody else. I think once we got a line from Plymouth and it went from Middlesbrough to Edinburgh to Glasgow to Dublin to Birmingham to London, then to Plymouth. And that's how we got the commentary on the air. And it was all Coxie on the phone, ringing his mates up and getting it sorted. So those were great days. And, you know, we're talking about the Rioch era here as well. And those fantastic days. Everton in the FA Cup at Ayresome Park, you know, we were down and out. And I was packing everything up in the studio because we were recording the commentary and I was packing everything up and John Allard was in the next studio and he just looked at me and he just went, it's not going to happen, is it? Corner for Middlesbrough. Hamilton floats it in and here comes Mowbray, bonk, and it's in and we're off and running again. And the pair of us that night looked at each other through the studio windows and went, yes, like that. And we were back to work again. And that was a superb, such a wonderful era for anybody who lived through that as a Borough fan. Those couple of years from liquidation up to about, what, 1991, just after the Zenith Data Systems, that was amazing. Going into town on a weekday night and at Wickers World, you might see a couple of the Borough players, you know, for instance, the Madhouse. Going into the Cleveland Centre the week before the Zenith Data Systems final, to record all the players day after day because there was two players doing signing sessions underneath the ship. And I used to go along and I used to get them to say, hello, it's Gary Parkinson for the best coverage of the Zenith Data Systems. Listen to Radio Cleveland. And I went religiously for about 2 weeks and got every single player. And for that, for me, you know, growing up, first game was against Liverpool in 1978 in the family enclosure, the Dickens family enclosure at Ayresome Park. To actually be in front of these people was just amazing. And of course, their legend of that team, the legend gets bigger and bigger and bigger every single year. And I sometimes have to pinch myself when, you know, I see one of those players wander by. I mean, Bernie's at every single game, you know, but then you might see Coops there, Pally's there, one or two others turn up. And for me, that's amazing. And even, you know, like people like Mark Proctor. I used to remember watching Proc. That was my era when I first started going with me mam and me dad and me sister. Jim Platt. Jim's been down to where I live, you know, and I had a coffee when he's been passing the area and stuff like that. You know, if you'd have told 15-year-old me that Jim Platt would come to my house for a coffee, it's like, yeah, get away, go on. But it's brilliant, you know, and Proc comes up to me, hiya, John, how are you doing? I'm thinking, it's Mark Proctor. There's still that fan inside of me going, it's Mark bloody Proctor. What's he saying hello to me for? I seriously can't believe it. It's just great.
I remember I went to school with Mark Proctor's younger brother. And once we went back after school back to his house, and Mark Proctor come in, and he was wearing a pair of boots. He was like around the house, took the studs out. He was like, you know, getting them softened up, you know, and I was just dumbstruck, you know. Yeah, I was a young lad who used to sort of like either get a squeeze or nick in at Ayrton Park if I didn't have enough pocket money. And there I am in the house with one of the players I used to go and watch. It was fantastic.
One of the ones which Anna, my wife, still reminds me about. Before we had the kids, when we had a bit of money, we used to go out and treat ourselves every now and again. And we once went to the Tontine, right? And on the next table was Mogger. He was the manager of West Brom, and I think Burrard played West Brom, and he was there. And he was on the next table to us. And literally, I just couldn't take my eyes off him. I was getting grief from Anna and everything like that. And then at the end of the night, she said, he got up to go pay the bill or whatever. She said, just go up and say hello. You've interviewed him a couple of times. So it's not like he won't know your name or, you know, there's your way in to say hello, and just go and have a chat with him. You go, do it, do it. I said, oh, okay. And I walked up to him and I went, Mr. Mowbray. And he turned around and he went, yes, mate. And I went, thanks. And walked off. And that was all I could say to him. Thanks. And walk off. I mean, I introduced myself. I'm John. I was on the radio. I interviewed you a couple of times. Yeah. Thanks. And walked off. And I think he still hasn't worked it out to this day. But I mean, Tony Mowbray, I'm sorry, but you know, I can't say any more about the bloke because I'll start to fill up because he is just wonderful.
Yeah. Well, you're not going to get anybody to disagree with you, by the way.
No, he's just wonderful.
I mean, I remember, I mean, you talk about being on the radio in the Rioch era, but the radio and the commentary was such a big part for a lot of Borough fans because it was before mobile phones, it was before Sky Sports, before the internet, everything, you know, and it was massive, wasn't it? It was a huge sort of audience that listening to the Borough.
Yeah, and there was restrictions even back then in the day on radio stations about how much they could, how much commentary they could do the match. And I think the BBC signed a deal where it was only second half commentary. That was the only thing, second half live, second half commentary. That was it. You couldn't do the first half, or you could do something like, I think it was 90 seconds you could do. And that was flashes and going to the ground. But you couldn't do a sustained period of commentary at all. So we used to do mock commentary. So Alistair would be there commentating on the game and we would have a tape running on it. And then if there was a goal, we'd quickly edit the goal out, take it through on a separate spool of tape and then play it. So it was like literally 30 seconds afterwards. And Alistair knew this and, you know, he used to do various things. I remember the Chelsea game, the promotion game, the Battle of Stamford Bridge. He was there and... he was up for the game. He was absolutely up for the game, him and Coxie. And his emotions got the better of him. And am I allowed to say a word here? It's not a bad word.
It's, go on then, yes.
It's okay. Dean Glover. Dean Glover gets... I've got it on tape still. Dean Glover gets the ball. Dean Glover. Go on, Dino. Go on, Dino. Stuff the bastards! Like that. And we had to say, Alistair, stop now. Now, please stop saying that.
We've been taken off air because of things like that.
No, I've got that on tape. But he used to do that. His emotions used to get a little ahead of him. So he used to have to check him back and say, Alistair, please don't say that in the second half, for crying out loud. Please do not do that. But, you know, he was a one-off. He was a great act with Coxie. Coxie's a lovely, lovely guy. And, you know, Mark Drury now and Maddo and Paul Addison do a fantastic, fantastic job as well. And Mark is very different to Alistair and, you know, he's plotting his own course and he's a really, really good commentator. He's a great bloke as well, you know, and to follow in the footsteps of Alistair, that's a big job. And I think he should be given so much credit for taking that on.
Yeah. Wasn't Malcolm Allison sacked?
That was Century. That wasn't the BBC. That was Century.
But was it Century? It was Borough commentary, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. He, again, he. I don't know if he realised they were on the air or whatever, but, yeah, his emotions got ahead of him a little bit. But again, you know, it happens. I mean, it's live radio. Do you remember, John, Carling Cup final, the Gatekeeper pub? I was working at Radio Cleveland then, BBC Tees, it is now. And we were hosting the weekend, the Welsh Weekender, we called it. I did the programme on Friday afternoon, my afternoon programme, from Bolton Wanderers. And we had a couple of the stars from Phoenix Knights turn up, not Peter Kay and not Paddy McGuinness, but a couple of the others turned up. And we did the show from Bolton that afternoon, then drove all the way to Cardiff, and we did the Welsh Weekender. And then when everybody was celebrating in the ground after the trophy had been risen aloft, me and my producer were off. We were running back to the Gatekeeper pub. So as everybody else filtered back in, you know, we were live on the air and here we are with the fans, da-di-da-di-da. And I always remember these two fans. I interviewed you that day. I remember these two fans and they were just like, oh, this is amazing. And I said, right, we're going to go live in a minute. Please do not swear. Whatever you do, do not swear. Okay, no problem. So we're back at the Gatekeeper pub and we've got, you know, Bill and Ben here, a couple of Borough fans. What do you think? Oh, this is just effing amazing. It's just like... Right, thanks for that. Obviously, we have to apologise for that. And it's just back to you in the studio. And I just looked at them and I said, you swore. And they... Yeah,
that wasn't me, was it?
No. No one ever lied. They looked at us and said, did we? I said, yes. I said, the F word. I didn't realise. Sorry about that. Oh, for... Don't! No more, please!
Yeah.
No more!
you see, that's why I could never, ever do your job.
I can't
get carried. I'd get carried away.
But you know, there's certain things like that. You know, throughout the career, Borough has always been peppered throughout my radio career, whether it be at the BBC, whether it was at TFM, and I did mornings there, and then you know, subsequently back at the BBC. The Borough has always been a constant in there, and I've had some amazing opportunities. I mean, I've done the announcements at Ayresome Park. I sat in that seat where Bernard sat as well, although I didn't turn around and say, I didn't say that because that is Bernard's line. Welcome to the happiest place in Britain. But, you know, to do that, to be behind the scenes and be up close personal during the Carling Cup, to go abroad to Bannock Ostrava, to go to the UEFA Cup final, and walk up the stairs into the ground, literally as the teams are coming out, and seeing whole rows of Borough fans who'd been out having a jolly old time on having a few sherbets with big, thick coats on. And it was a really warm night. And no one ever lies, we walked up to the back of the stand. There was row after row of people like this. Just flaked out fast asleep because they'd had such a good time. To seeing the procession afterwards, to go into Tall Trees for the Carling Cup night, all of these amazing experiences, just fantastic.
Brilliant. Well, like I say, when you sort of go back over the years, you know, we've had some fantastic times, and let's hope Michael Carrick will bring us some more. Hopefully, May this year.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed. You never know. Get past Blackburn Rovers first.
May next year. Yeah, May next year. What will be there this year?
Yeah, I meant this season. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
It's late. This season, next year, it's all the same. It's all the same. But yeah, no, it's fantastic. And it's, you know, Gary Phillipson as well is great to work with. And he's doing the fan zone. He's doing bits and pieces inside the ground as well. So, you know, it's a nice feeling about the club. And there has been now for a couple of seasons. And all the people behind the scenes who look after the lounges, the host, the hostesses and everything like that, everybody is just completely geared. And I feel it more than ever now, completely geared to have a successful season, that this is the season it's going to be. You know, there is a certain amount of optimism as you wander the corridors during a match day. And there are a lot of corridors, as we know.
Brilliant.
And you know, we are, you know, getting towards that busy time of the season where, you know, positions start to put themselves into place and pick the teams, really see where they are in the league. And the next game we've got, John Don, is such a huge test. Burnley away, one of the promotion favourites, you know, one of the teams that are up there with us. You know, I like to class ourselves as in that top five, you know, amongst them four that have tried to scurry away. We've clung in, we've stuck in there, we've got ourselves in the fight. Friday night, under the lights, Sky have done us a great favour once again. But we're going to be backed by another saw that away crowd. I think the 2,300 they gave us. Mega, I can't wait. I know you can't wait. It's a massive test, and you know, against a team that are going to be hoping they're in the same position we are in May.
Yeah. I mean, it is a tough test. They don't concede many goals either this season. They're not prolific scorers, but they don't concede many. So yeah, it's going to be a stern test. But do you know what? We're capable. I've seen enough matches this season to know that we can, if we're on our game, we can get the result there.
Yeah, exactly. And what John Don said there, that's easy enough for me to say, is, you know, he's absolutely right, John, because, you know, we've seen games where we haven't been at our best and we've been beat, but we've seen it at our sparkling best, and we can be brilliant to watch at times, and we've been on Sky and been brilliant to watch, and you know, the Sky commentators have been waxing lyrical about us, and you know, I just feel this is another game where, you know, Burnley won't sit back, they'll let us play our football, you know, because they'll press us, and I think there's another opportunity to get another key monumental victory on the road again.
Is that one to me?
Yeah, that's you. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. No, it is. I mean, this is the thing. You know, on our day, incredible. And going to somewhere like Burnley, Turf Moor, there is no fear. There is absolutely no fear, where in, you know, previous years, there might have been a little bit, because obviously they've been in the Premier League for a long time. They dropped down. They've got the money, da-di-da-di-da. But they've found it tough. And now starting to hit a bit of form, and you know, Borough fans aren't scared about going to Burnley, and neither are the team. And it's a, you know, it's an old ground. It's got that atmosphere about it as well. So that all adds to it as well. So it should be a cracking night. I mean, from where I'm sitting, Burnley's about 16 miles away, 16, 17 miles, although it takes you about 3 hours on the roads around here. And unfortunately, I can't go because I'm dad's taxi, because the kids are out doing left, right and other things. So, and the missus is away again. So I've got to do all the taxi bits and pieces. So I'll be listening to Radio Lancashire, which I can just about hear from where we are.
Yeah, it's one of those games where you just think, yeah, I'd love to be there. I mean, luckily, you know, me and John Don will be there. We're very much looking forward to it. It's going to be a tough trip. It is going to be a tough trip. You know, I'm not kidding myself. You know, this is a big test for us. It really is. But you know, let's see how we get on. You know, I wouldn't make many changes if you know, from Saturday. I'd probably bring McGree back in if I can. Well, I'd probably say that's about it, John. I'm about right with that. I think, you know, bring McGree back in. Everybody else pretty much merited the side.
Who would you replace?
The argument is Dieng or Brin.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, that's a tough question, because Sol Brin's done very well.
Yes.
But if it was my call, Zenny Dieng's number one choice, so I'd go for Dieng. But I wouldn't be worried if the manager chose to keep the same keeper, and yeah, I'd be okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would as well. You know, I fully trust Michael Carrick's judgment. He's got my trust. Yeah, I think he's done enough, hasn't he, to say he knows what he's doing, kind of thing now. So,
but isn't it a good headache for him to have? Awesome. All of these headaches. Isn't it good? Yeah. Isn't it good?
I know, especially when you think this time last year, the amount of players we had out injured, and we were so struggling to put, you know, 11s together, never mind a match day squad. And, you know, you could, all the, you know, woe is me stories from up the road at in Tyneside saying, you know, we've got we've got 11 players out, we've got 12 players out. Well, I'm not being funny, mate. We've got 19 players out and we're struggling to put teams together and we're still beating the likes of Chelsea at home. You know, that's what we did last year. We were absolutely magical. So the headache is a really good one to have. And It just shows how far we've come as well. You know, how far he's developed this squad, because it looks a pretty... I say it every week, it's the best squad in the Championship for me. There's no squad that competes with it for me. I know there's likes of Leeds, Sheffield United. We've got very strong squads, absolutely right. But man for man, you know, position for position, we've got everything in every position for me. Maybe barring, you know, debatable left back, debatable. You know, although, but for me, Borges has had a really good last few games. I've not really had a grumble with him. So, you know, he's getting there. And Giles didn't exactly show himself up in the best light on Saturday, when Ben Doak ran rings round him at times. So, you know, says it all. But we go there with confidence. And I'll start with you, John Don. That key time again, where we try and put a bit more money in the coffers for our charities. Who are you going for? What player are you going for? How are we going to get a few more quid in there?
Hang on. Dally's on the phone. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm going 1-1.
Go on then. 1-1. Who's your scorer?
I'm going 1-1. I'm going to go Hayden Hackney.
Hackney? All right. I like that. Now, Mr. Foster, I'll come to you. You've already said you're going 1-0.
Did I?
Well, you gave that straight away. You know,
that's your stock answer, you
I might
said.
Just
you
change. Stop, I might just change my mind.
Stop making them an answer.
On the podcast. Go on.
But go on. I'll give the floor to you. Score and goal scorer.
1-0 to the Borough, obviously. scorer. Oh, I see. Hackney.
Okay.
You're both Hackney, going Hackney 1-0.
All right, okay. I've got 2-1, Finazaz and Borges to get another yellow card. And hopefully get us a few more quid.
There you go. Oh,
none of us have got us getting beat. That's a good sign. That's a good sign.
Course.
And just like that, we're all done. All finished. John Don, always a pleasure having you on. You know, me right-hand man. I'll see you on Friday. We'll have a good chin wagging to catch up then. John, thank you so much for coming on. You've been absolutely brilliant. The stories you've told, you know, you are the voice of the Riverside. Everybody knows your voice straight away. Keep doing what you're doing because you do a fantastic job. You know, us fans, you know, we all commend you for the job you do. You give that voice that we all want to do ourselves, but we can't because we've got way to, we haven't got the patience or, you know, the skill to do it because we just go off on a tangent a bit like I've just done now. But you've got the skill to do it. So I've got nothing but credit to you because, yeah, you do a fantastic job. So
do you want that tenner now?
20 quid, we agreed.
But honestly, thank you so much for coming out. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. Please don't make this the only time you come on. Come on again soon. You know, you're always welcome. It's been brilliant speaking to you.
Well, it's been good to come on. Thank you for asking. And let me give like a little bit about what we do behind the scenes. You know, as I said to the 12th Man group and various other groups as well, I'm just trying to make it. I'm trying to help it along a little bit. It's not the be all and end all. If anybody's got any suggestions, please get in touch with me or get in touch with the club. If you want to know why this happens at a certain time, I'll absolutely explain why, you know, at the end we play the lights and Pig Bag comes on and stuff like that. It's not a problem. I just want a dialogue with fans just to try and get the best that we can. And we'll see, you know, how long we continue doing it for.
There you go.
Yep, nice one.
There you go. You're always welcome to come back on as well. So, and to you people listening, watching, liking, subscribing, commenting, getting involved, you know, we wouldn't do this without you listening to us whinge on and just go on like we do. So thank you so much. Keep going with us. You know, there's plenty more to come this season. And, we'll have a chat next week. Hopefully 3 more points in the bag, more money in the charity kitty, and we'll preview a big game at Elland Road. So be seeing you. Arrivederci, up the Borough.
And as Bernard Jen would say,
here at your favourite football ground today.
Up the Borough.